So I was just going to go through a list of questions because I wanted to ask everyone the same questions. But and some of these maybe I already know the answer to because of speaking with you earlier. But which trail did you guys use this year, and where did you hunt?
We hunted pretty much straight out of Bravo, which is trail number 6, which extends kind of north of Bravo, straight down, kind of from where we started. So we kind of conjoined with Herman's trail, so we had to work together to get further down.
What time of year did you start building
that? Oh, man, we started at end of March, beginning of April. We kind of started early. That's because it's been nice out. The weather's been really nice out this spring.
You guys stayed in that same area?
We stayed in the same area all year. We never moved or we never really go anywhere else. Kind of stayed where we were kind of happy with our trail.
So what was the main reason for placing the trail in that location?
It's because there was heavy ice around the general area where it was completely solid. Really high Evonecs were almost 2 stories high. We kind of felt comfortable around there because of that reason was that they had both sides of us were really high Evonecs, which weren't too far, so we knew that was grounded. That's why we stayed in that area this year. That's why we felt comfortable staying there. And to this day, it still hasn't gone out yet.
Yeah. So. Well, and another question I wanted to ask about where people place their trails, it relates to what the ice is like at the edge. Because I know I've heard some people say that they shoot for some places where there's an embayment in the ice or maybe there's kind of a little peninsula that sticks out.
Yeah, one of those things that most people kind of look for that sticks out. But most people I know that they're looking for kind of like heavy, solid, pull up the whale like kind of ice. And that had several areas where we were out there. You know, it was kind of like enough to pull up whales where we thought it was going to break up, so we stayed there. It was because there was a couple of heavy, thick, you know, thick ice there on the Tubaca Rock. That's one reason why we kind of stayed there, because other than it being grounded, we kind of felt safe right there. I mean, there was places all along from down there closer to shore where we kept our gear, which was the Latuvik, where we store our stuff away from the edge to safe ground. We call it Nungatuvik, which is where we felt comfortable away from the edge.
So that's the place where you put your...
Yeah, that's Nungatuvik.
Yeah, because I was actually going to ask a question about it. Could you give me your closest guess on spelling that word?
Yeah.
Because I had noticed that a lot of... You can write it.
Yeah. It's N... A Y N. You can probably almost. I'm just trying to spell it in. So you can probably say. That's how they don't spell it, but that's how you can probably pronounce it. Nungatuvik. Nungatuvik. It's a place where you store. Or place of whaling stuff on safer ground.
And that's the place where a lot of people are kind of when they're waiting for the lead to open.
Yeah, waiting for the lead to open. That's what's Nungatuvik, which is where we were storing our stuff. You know,
yeah.
They were all. There was how many stuff other people's stuff were too. Also, on the same area where we left our stuff, because we felt so comfortable that because he was grounded right there, so it wasn't going to move then. It still hasn't moved yet, you know.
Yeah.
That's why we kind of felt comfortable around straight out from Bravo. Mm-hmm. Because of the high Unix, you can probably still see him from here, but that's the reason why we kind of stayed around that general area. Everybody else was too far out, or, you know, there wasn't really high Unix down south, and that's the reason why we kind of stayed around.
When people are trying to build a trail towards a specific place, I've heard some people refer to the behavior of how a whale swims along the lead. And do you think, or have you observed that there's a specific behavior that people try to take advantage of? Like, for example, a whale that will come in just in embayments and just hang out. Do people try to take advantage of that?
It's a benefit when people find those kind of things, and they kind of keep, like, trying to guard that area where they have those little gunnish look, they call it, which is a little kind of bay thing. Mm-hmm. And people want to try and always kind of stay in that area. It's kind of like a benefit, like the chances increase of catching more of a and striking a whale at one of those little bays. It's an added benefit, yeah. And as to see if there were some down there was a couple of them, little kind of bay things down there. And just it's just the multi-year ice wasn't further out, but young ice was all crushed up this year, and it was just so miserable this year. Just no, young ice was all, I don't know what you call it, brash ice, fresh. Uh-huh. We had that all spring, and just miserable conditions for, you know, trying to pull up whales this spring. It's just, everybody was doing that this spring. They were pulling up the whales on the brash, young, crushed ice, which is... wasn't really good this year.
Is that the stuff that you and I saw when the lead was closed, but you had ice that was going north, and it wasn't eroding the edge of the ice because it was just slush.
Yeah.
You had the same stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that typical? Because I hadn't actually seen that so as close except for this year.
Well, usually when it does come in, it kind of breaks off and goes right back out. But this year we had. I'm assuming we had no currents, we didn't have favorable winds, so it kind of stayed in. And that's the reason why we had all that young, brash ice this year. Because we waited and waited and waited for the currents to change and the wind to pick up, and that never occurred. And that's why we had the young, brash ice this year. It's because non-favorable conditions, current and wind. Mm-hmm. And if we had those combined, you know, that young brush ice would have broke off kind of early in spring.
Yeah.
And that didn't occur. It was a waiting game all this year. There was nothing else but a waiting game. We probably had a total of 5 or 6 days of open water, and that was it. And those couple days of open water kind of like landed all the whales. In a week, less than a week span.
Yeah, and then that was May 16.
May 16.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the day I left was May 16th, and that was the day, or I guess it was the night prior to the day of May 16th when ABC crew got their well.
And that's, you know, it was nothing but a wait for the open wire, and wait and see what's going to happen. And that's what it was this year. 2009 was a wait and wait and wait. Mm-hmm. And we've never had that for a long time.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I guess we got to endure the, you know, be patient, those kind of things. So most people that signed up for whaling this year, they waited and waited and waited, and they never went down. They just never put their stuff out this year.
Yeah, a lot of captains just didn't ever go out.
There was a couple that, you know, they had their stuff ready on the as soon as they found out it was going to open up, they had their stuff ready. They just never went down to the beach to go out. They just had their stuff all packed, their skin boats on the sled, and they had everything ready to go. A couple of guys. They just never went down. They just, because it was no open water. It was too late in the season. Some of the older guys, the older captains, oh, it's already May 10, May 12. You know, the big whales are here, so. And that's why I think they kind of like, well, there's no sense in going out because it's so late. And it was just the most luckiest crew this year was to catch a small one, which is ABC. You hardly ever, rarely catch a 27-footer so late in the season.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they caught a small one this year.
Well, when you have conditions like you had this year, when the lead is closed for a long time, do people think that the whales are still going through, or do the whales get blocked up?
They know, and they've known this for a long time, that the whales, no matter, even if it is closed, that the whales go further out, no matter how far you go out. I mean, you can go 30 miles straight out and put yourself out there in the ocean and wait, and you'll see whales go by.
Yeah.
It's a known fact that just because the ice is closed, the whales are going to not run. But, you know, the whales, no matter how or what, they will get through, no matter if it is closed. I mean, they'll find a way. I mean, we've known that for a long time, that even if it's closed, the whales are still traveling. They're going to go as far as they could go out to. Head east, and even if it's going, I mean, there, you could go as far as you can go down, and you'll still see whales going by.
What's the word that you use to describe that brash, that chewed up slush?
Iguac.
Iguac.
Yeah, it's that fresh new stuff that just came in and froze along the edge, and it's not really solid, it's all compact. It's all broken pieces that are compact together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's iguac, they call it. It attaches itself to the shore fast ice, and it's really unstable, and it's kind of mushy, those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's iguac. So.
Well, you've already partially answered this, but what type of ice did your trail go across, such as major cracks or major ridges?
On our trail this year, it was first half a mile was almost like flat ice. Then we come to smaller ridges, and then closer towards open water, it's just heavy, thick ice, which is kind of, we had to work a couple of days to break the big of an it was kind of, first half a mile was flat, and the next rubble, and the next part of that was kind of like heavy, thick, couple of days of work of chopping trail. It was, I'd say our trail wasn't too bad this year. Makes us work a little harder to get to where we wanted to go this year. It was, wasn't too bad this year. The way that we saw the ice this year, it wasn't too bad.
How long did it take to build that trail?
Some people say it took a week, but, hard work for 2 hours here and 2 hours there. It was a couple of days of work.
Mm-hmm.
Probably no more than 4 days of straight hard work, we would have gone and did our trail from here down to the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And when people work together, they can get it done in sooner, and which most people did. They kind of worked together, and they were already on along the edge of the ocean already. So.
Well, was there any areas? You mentioned that it was a well-grounded trail with those big ridges out there. Did you guys have your trail go out into the extension ice?
Yeah, we did that this year. Because everybody else was kind of like wait and see, but we took the chances of going further out from our trail on our GPS coordinates. It took us from our edge of our trail 1.5 miles north from our last known edge here.
Mm-hmm.
It was 1.5 miles from due north of our position. So yes, we had to take chances to go out on the young ice, and we did that. We went out and we spent 2 days on the edge of the water, and we saw whales going by, and we had our tent and all our gear all set up for 2 days this year.
Was that in April or May?
May, first part of May.
Okay.
We in fact had spent out 2 days at the edge this year, because we decided to, oh, it's not moving, we might as well go down there and check. So we did. We went down and checked, and we went as far as the ice could let us. From our last known reading here, we took and we went 1.5 miles straight north, and that's where we spent 2 days along the edge. And we could have struck a whale that morning, and the wind started picking up real quick from the west, and it kind of was closing up kind of quick, so we packed up our stuff and went back to Nunatuvik and kind of waited again. So, like I was saying, there was crews this year that waited for the ice to go out, and it never did go out for some people, so they decided, well, it's too late in the season, and then they never went out. I mean, they had all their gear ready to go at a moment's notice, and, you know, there's people out there this year that were spending most of their time in the tent this spring, and, you know, the monotony of staying inside the tent, you know, just, I don't know how people can stand that. They spend all their time in the tent, and which is, I guess, a sign of patience, I don't know. I couldn't spend a couple of days out there sleeping in the tent and waiting for them. I mean, we like to come ashore and check on the weather and those kind of things. And, you know, simple pleasures of getting on the phone real quick and those kind of things. But there's some people out there that will camp out on the ice for weeks on end. I don't know how they do that, but...
Is there a similar name, or not similar, but is there a name for the camp at the edge of the ice?
There's not really a name for that other than they're nip-bucking. It's calling, they're at the edge of the water, and they're looking out for the whales. It's called nip-bucking. It's just, you got your tent and your boat all along the edges of the water. It's called, when you're looking out and looking, it's called nipuck, looking and looking.
So that could be any time, whether you camp there or not? Or do they just use it when they're camped?
When the word nipuck comes out, that we know that they're along the edge of the ocean. They're nipucking, that means they're along the edge of the ocean looking. That's no matter if you... choose any other terminology. If I were to bring my skin boat and, you know, my tent down to the edge of the water and I'm looking out for whales, it's what I'm doing. I'm looking out. I'm nip-bucking. That's what the term is. Is that they're ready to, you know, launch their boat and stuff like that. That's the word that we use for. We're camping along the edge of the ocean with our gear, and we're looking. We're looking for whales. It's called nipuck. So, I don't know any other words other than.
Well, do you know that the whales that were caught? Did people have a trouble hauling the whales up because of the ice at the edge?
Yes and no. First one was so small, it was just a matter of making the amount to pull up the wheel wider. It's probably about 15 feet wide. They had to, you know, flatten out the ice and make it 15 feet wide so they can pull the wheel up, because you got to work on both sides of the wheel to cut it up and, you know, haul the meat and muck it away. But the first one, there was not really any problems other than, you know, it being small and easy to pull up. And the next three, just so huge that you couldn't pull up any of the whales along the brash young ice. It was just, every time they pull it up a little bit, they'd fall through. Pull it up a little bit, then fall through. Then pull it up a little more, they'd fall through. It's just no possible way. There was a no-win situation where you can't pull up the whole whale. It just, lucky they even got most of the whale, on two of the whales. You know, Johnny Levitt, I don't think they got the whole whale out of the water. I don't think they brought everything back. Erie crew, they might have brought everything back, but I'm not sure. I mean, it was kind of one of those big ones where it was probably 50-some footer, 60-footer. And they didn't bring everything back because they were on such young ice, brash ice. It was just, every time they pulled it up, it would fall through. It probably took them a day and a half of just trying to pull it up. So, yes and no. Yes, there is problems with young, fresh, brash ice, which is, you know, you can't pull up a well on any of those kind of things. But the first one was, it was so small, it was so light, it did hold, and it did hold the whale on top of the ice. As to those big ones, no, there's no possible way you can pull up a big whale on any of that kind of ice.
So did they have to butcher it partially in the water?
They had to do that. They had to put some of the muck off, some of the meat, and then try again, pull up a little bit more, and then take some more off, and pull it up a bit more, and the smart people are the ones that cut off the head first, and then pull up the whale, and then after they're done with that, pull up the head. And Wainwright does that. They catch the big ones, they cut off the head first thing.
So they anchor the head somehow?
Yeah, they have the thing tied up. That's what they do. They had the whale from the edge of the water, they brought it to the edge. In 2 hours, they had it up onto the ice. Same kind of ice conditions as here. It's just that the smarter people take the head off first in the water. They chop the head off real quick, and then they pull up the body first. Next thing they do, they already had the head already ready to set up, and they had pulled it out of the water, and within 2 hours. And this is in Wainwright.
Yeah.
So
the head's what, about a third of the body?
Pretty close to a third of the body.
Yeah.
And they had probably a 63-64 footer. And I wish we would have at least, you know, taken the head off first down here, then pull up the body, and then we would have saved practically everything. But some people are, you know, they've got their own thinking, they've got their own methods and those kind of things, and can't really tell a person what to do. You can suggest, but most people that work together get things done so quickly. You know, Wainwright people, I'm so amazed, and I'm just baffled why better people don't do that, which we don't. We don't think ahead and say, pull, you know, cut the head off first. But as to your question, is there a problem with a young brush ice? Yes, in some aspect, yeah. It's been a problem with this young brash ice.
Yeah.
It's not safe to be out on. You can't really pull anything out of the water on those kind of situations like that.
Well, if it is solid ice, it's not that younger, unconsolidated stuff. If it's solid ice, how thick does it need to be to haul a whale if it's It's 60 feet.
We've had, you know, whales that were 42 foot, that can come out onto solid ice. And, you know, this is probably the first time in a long time we've caught 60 foot of whales in a long time in Barrow.
Yeah.
Small as the ones were 45, you know, nothing over 55. Well, it's probably been 10 years since we caught those kind of big ones, but 60 footers, no, we haven't caught those for a long time. They had the chance and they took the opportunity of striking the first whale they saw, and they did that. They saw a whale and went, well, let's get this one. Don't matter the size and, you know, how big it is or those kind of things. It does matter on, you know, if it was multi-year, thick, heavy ice, we would have had no problems. We probably would have had all three of the big whales up on the ice. If we had solid ice like that, that heavy, thick, multi-year ice, I think we would have probably saved every part of the whale if we had that multi. We would have had no problems pulling it out of the water onto the ice. It would have been, everybody would have went down, and because everybody would have went down to go help, but knowing that they're having a hard time trying to pull it out of the ice, out of the water, onto the young ice, fall through, and then pull it up, fall through, and it was kind of like, they're not going to pull it out of the water because it's going to take forever. And by that time, the whale meat was already getting bad and those kind of things. And is there a difference in the multi-years? Yes, there is, you know. If we had the thick multi, you know, 20 feet thick, we would have saved every part of the whale this year.
Mm-hmm.
On the ones that they caught, you know.
Yeah. Well,
and some saved the last whale that was struck and couldn't pull up was probably close to 70 footer. I'm not sure, but
they did strike a whale they couldn't get this year.
They brought parts of it up.
Hmm.
They had to cut most of it out in the water, and it was the Akimwa crew. They were down there by Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't pull it out of the water. They got closer to Barrow.
They were out here somewhere.
They were.
I guess not that pretty far.
Probably 8 and 9. So
yeah, one of those.
Yeah, 9. These guys were here. They struck a whale. They brought it over to number 7, Jacob Adams Trail, PK-13. They brought two of the whales here, Johnny Levitz and Kibwalks. They brought those over here because they were out boating out here. Anyway, they brought both the whales here. They got done with Johnny's, and they decided because it couldn't come out onto the ice, they sure pulled it over to, let's see, number 4.
Mm.
And they, to this day, it might still be attached to the ice, straight out from here. You know,
so was that David Levitz?
Yeah. They tied the whale to the shore fast ice over here at number 4. So as soon as this part goes out, I think we're going to go out, check over here to check to see if the whale is still attached to the ice.
Mm.
And we may end up bringing back the, you know, the head and the rest of the muktuk.
It would still be good?
Yeah, but not the meat. Not the
just
the outer part. So that's what we're hoping. If it's still attached here, we'll bring it back to shore and, you know, pull it up and take the rest of the muktuk off. And so, you know, those guys that struck the whale, they had to bring them over further over this way because favorable ice conditions, which was, you know, between here and town, which is kind of thicker ice.
Yeah.
So they did tie it to the show fast ice over here at number 4. So we're hoping that it's still there. I mean, we haven't been able to go out and check yet, but you know, chances of it being there, since it hasn't gone out yet, the chances are pretty good.
And you mentioned the multi-year ice. I think we had this conversation in May when I was here just about how much multi-race is out there. How would you describe just the amount of multi-race? Compared to like maybe the last 5 years, but then also compared to 30 years ago, is it a common recent year, the amount that was out there this year?
If you would ask me this 10 years ago, I would have said it hasn't changed. There's still multi-year ice here and there and down, you know, up the coast and down the coast. If you would ask me that 10 years ago, I would have never, you know, said there's going to always be multi-year ice. But this year, last year, and the year before that, we've rarely, you know, had multi-years. There were some 2 years ago that was straight out from Newark, and nobody knew that other than guys that went up to go check up there. There was a couple pieces there. So to your question, was there more or less significant less from 20, 30 years ago, almost down to zero, zilch, you know? But having to go out there and then go past Newark this year with you and having to find, you know, miles and miles of multi-year ice, which, you know, I thought I would never ever see the two-story Pekalia. I thought I would never. But this year we did, you know.
So would you think was that surprising, or do you think it's typically like that up there?
Surprising in some sense.
Yeah.
And I was happy to see that there was two-story Pekalia'ak, you know. I thought I would never ever see that again. I thought I would never, to honestly tell you, I thought I would never ever see those kind of ice like that again.
Yeah.
And it was surprising. It just, it was kind of a shock. And I showed these pictures to those guys at Rescue Base, and they said, no way, you can't, there's no ice like that. Look, there's pictures.
Yeah.
And they were surprised. And some of them expressed that they're going to take a drive out that way because that stuff out there is grounded right down to the bottom. Because when the ice rolled over, it kind of exposed the bottom of the gravel and mud on one side. So we know that it's going to be out there for a while.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because as I think I told you, if you look at the satellite imagery, it doesn't show anything. It might show it in some way, but even if it shows it, we need to know how to interpret the image. And right now, it's if you look at these images, you can't look here.
You can't distinguish it.
No, it's too difficult.
Yeah.
No one has really done it successfully with these type of images, and so you can't really go back and look at how the multi-year ice has changed over the years. I mean, you really almost have to rely on what people see on the ground.
See and feel. Yeah. Yeah, it's just everything's so blended in. It's just you can't really, you know, they're almost. You can't really tell unless you go out there and see, which we did. And it was just so surprising that, you know, we found so much out there. It's just unbelievable. And those guys at Rescue Base were saying, "No, this ain't Pekalia." They said, "Yeah, look."
So that's the idea. Burnt did work.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it did work.
I was wondering because my computer was in.
Yeah, it did work, so I wanted to thank you for the CD, so.
Yeah, well, that was enjoyable for me to actually see all that multi-race just to get used to identifying it, because I've seen very little in the previous years that it's, I think you need a lot of experience to be able to pick it out, so that was really a good learning experience for me.
And even on the Narayaks Trail, where we found those multi-year, it's kind of like, not really flat, but those kind of rounded edges on ice.
Yeah.
So yes, if it was, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I would have said, no, it's not going to be. This ice will be around here forever. And if I would have said that 10, 15 years ago, I would have thought someone was crazy that this ice would be gone. Now it's almost
non-existent other than freezing over in the wintertime.
Do you think that multi-rice, just the stuff that was out here near where people were hunting, did that add any advantage?
Other than having to use that for drinking purposes, it was just some advantage. People use that as the only multi-rice there, and they went out and got some ice for drinking purposes and those kind of things, and it benefited some, to some extent.
But it wasn't enough to, solidify.
It wasn't enough to, other than nothing, it wasn't.
I guess what I'm wondering is the amount that we saw out there off town, but did it make the shore ice any more stable?
I wouldn't say that it made the shore fast stable, because it was inside the Avonex.
Yeah.
It was inside the Avonex already. It was already inside, closer to shore, and the Avonex were further out. So not to say it was an added benefit and keeping things guarded. No, it wasn't really that. There was already stuff beyond it towards the ocean that had already been grounded. So.
Well, I kind of already talked about this, but I wanted to ask, where was your Nainatuluk? Probably said that wrong, but camp, your safe camp. Because I don't think I had ever seen it, yeah.
Nainatuluk was, it wasn't too far from our edge of, it probably about, in between the Avonex. It wasn't too far, it was just probably within 1,000 feet from our edge to the Nangatuvik.
Okay. So it was close to where the trail on the map stops.
Yeah.
It was somewhere in there.
Yeah, it was kind of close. It wasn't too far. I mean, that's how thick and stable that thing was. It was just probably within 1,000 feet from our edge.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't too far. It was just so close. Yes, we're kind of like walking distance, really.
Yeah. So. And so then, your crew, did you guys, that day that you pulled your equipment off, did you guys go out again?
No, we didn't go back out again. No, this is just, the temperatures were so, warm that it kind of melted everything else so quick. It's just like a, holy smokes, we're already in springtime, there's no more snow, no more snow in town.
Yeah.
And everything just started melting so quick, it kind of flooded the edge of the beach, so it didn't, it was no sense in going back down because there's so much water along the edge of the beach, just so muddy and water. So we didn't go back out that day, we brought our stuff back in.
Yeah. It was, which was like May 15.
Yeah, right around the May 15. It was just so, so warm and so hot that we had so much water along town here that we had more water than we had ice that was showing. Just it was really bad. But further north, by Gnarl North, there's just no water along the edge. It's just completely just you couldn't see any water out there, and just. For some reason, just in front of town here, it's just water and everything else. But further north, from Gnarl to Nuvuk, it's just people were still out camping and hunting, doing their snow machining out there. So.
What are? This is one of my. Or more general questions. So what are the things that you start to look for to see when the ice is deteriorating or becoming unsafe? Like what stages does the ice go through that leads up to when it's time to get off?
When it's time to get off?
First, we see the melting of the snow, which exposes cracks and those kind of things. Once the snow starts melting, it kind of releases the glue. When the snow melts and when the cracks are exposed, it melts and it creates water and it opens up. Boom. When the glue is separated, which we call when a crack is formed, you know, we've got a little space in between. It freezes. That ice in the middle freezes, and that's the glue that holds, you know, both sides of the ice. Shelfast ice, and here's the fresh ice, or really multi-year ice. Really, if it freezes over, it glues itself. So once we start to see the stages of where it's really starting to melt quick, and it's starting to get water in the cracks, and it melts that ice, and the glue is broken, and that's where we have our senses of it's not safe to start being out here. You kind of get that uneasy feeling because, you know, that melt water is melting everything else in between. The snow is melting and starts exposing cracks and those kind of things, and later in the season you don't have any more snow to really drive your snow machines other than bumpy ice. You know, the ice are starting to expose rough trails. You can't really snow is what we kind of really count on for making our trails smooth. It doesn't expose the rough parts, and it's easier to drive on. Once that snow is gone, then the bumpy parts start showing up. Once the water starts melting, the snow starts melting, then it exposes the cracks and the glue is broken. And there's nothing that's holding that ice together. And those kind of things are. I wouldn't say that if it is. Was it hard? It was hard this year, you know. We had so much warm weather so quick in such a short time that it kind of melted everything else real quick.
Yeah.
It got hot out for how many days and just melted everything else. It was just melt everything so quick. It just water everywhere. Kind of bad for whaling. When it gets too warm out. We had west winds and south winds all spring. It kind of brought up warm weather and melted everything else. So
the bottoms of these grounded ridges, they're still obviously grounded because all that ice is staying in there. Is that something that always is kind of the final thing that holds the ice in? I guess when you're actually out on the ice during whaling, did you ever have to worry about those keels, the bottom of those ridges, getting detached, or is that something that always happens later that you don't worry about?
Once we know that it's starting to really melt and thaw out real quick, we know that the ice is starting to get lower and lower. Structurally, it gets smaller and smaller, so we know the bottom of that is. Once it starts to melt, then we know it's going to lift up. And because when we know the south winds and the currents are coming up, we know it's bringing all that warm water up and it's melting under the ice, you know, underwater where that ice is grounded. It kind of melts everything else away, melts it up real quick. And we know that once it pops in and goes out, and that's. You know, one of the things that we always kind of be observant was that we get the south currents coming up, and we know that's bringing warm water, and that kind of increases the melt on the shelfast ice. So that's one thing we've noticed is that when the currents come from west to east, we know that it's bringing in the warm currents, and it melts the ice quicker.
Is that the dominant current?
Yeah, springtime. In the late in the season, but the dominant currents are, east to west, which is norm. But in the late season, it shifts over. Late season, which is May 15, May 16, those kind of areas, where we've seen it in the early part of May, where the currents are just blazing through early spring. I mean, yeah, early spring, and we see icebergs, you know, going by full blast further out, and you know that the currents are going that way. So, yeah, we notice when the currents are changing. We see, you know, ice goes floating by real quick. And that's one of the things we observe is, you know, the currents and those kind of things, you know.
I think that's all my questions.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
I really appreciate these moments to talk to you, because I'm really learning a lot. Being out on the ice, you learn a lot, but actually... After I'm done, I get to think about things and then ask more specific questions.
Uh-huh.
It really helps to understand how things fit together, because it's really easy to write a scientific report that sounds right to somebody who doesn't know about sea ice, but in reality it's not correct. So I mean, these conversations really help to ensure that what we write is actually correct.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything else that you thought was important about this season that we didn't talk about.
Other than, it's one of the most kind of heartbreaking things about this year was that, you know, we weren't given the opportunity to practice traditional whaling this year because of the ice. It's because this past 12 months, Barrow and its people have been kind of feuding and bickering at each other all this last winter, and that's the reason why we think the ice didn't go out this year early and it stayed closed, because we as Alaska Native people think that, you know, it's because that reason is that Barrow and his people were bickering too much, fighting each other, you know, those kind of things, and that's the reason why we didn't have open water this year, because of the fighting amongst ourselves. You know, we cannot keep this up, because if we were to start keep bickering and fighting each other, then we know that we're not going to have a good season. And then it kind of showed Barrow people, you have to stop that. And people got another VHF this spring and said, that's the reason why we're not catching whales this year, because of this kind of mentality, this kind of attitude, this kind of bickering. You know, it's because of that reason, we believe, is because of that Barrow wasn't successful in anything this year, springtime. And that's the reason why we barely got enough this spring. That's going to make us think the coming year that we have to watch our tongue, we have to watch our, what do we say to people, and those kind of things. Fighting amongst ourselves is not beneficial. It's not beneficial to us, not beneficial to culturally. We're supposed to be humble and not fight and those kind of things. And this is going to teach us, it's going to teach Barrow, we cannot keep fighting amongst ourselves. And that's the reason we didn't have a good year this year. And we're kind of lucky to have two blanket toss this year.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to make, less fighting and less bickering this year. Feuding amongst people and fighting against, everybody else. That's the reason we think, Alaska people, that Barrow's been feuding and fighting too much all year, and that's why we didn't get any open water. That's all.
To me, it makes sense that it's more than just about winds and currents. It's about other things, too.
Yeah. So it's kind of little things that amount to something big. It's just, you know, small things that could have been prevented, you know. People speak up, say, don't do that. You can't be speaking like that. You cannot be talking someone down. You can't be, you know, mightier than thou kind of mentality and those kind of things. And once it amounts and starts growing up, it starts becoming a big hill, from a small molehill to a big hill, and it creates, you know, uneasy feelings about what's our spring going to be like, those kind of things, you know. It'll teach Baron, you know, people like us, a simple little watch your tongue, watch your, you know, how you treat other people. So.
Well, hopefully the story will change for next year.
Hopefully. You know, it kind of makes us feel, you know, we got to do better next year. We got to do something, you know. I'm pretty sure that fall times comes around, everybody's going to be kind of like, you know, be on your guard and be on your, you know, watch your tongue and watch how you treat people and be nice to people, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, thanks again.